This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell.
There's been some growing concern about the way antibiotics are used in livestock here in the United States and how often the medications are used in livestock feed, even for healthy animals.
This week, the Wisconsin Public Interest Research Group and some area doctors called upon the federal government to add new restrictions on antibiotic use. Carol Spiegel joins us now in the studio. She is Professor Emerita of Pathology and Laboratory Medicine at UW-Madison. And Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I want to start out with some background here for people who might not understand how antibiotics are used in the livestock industry. I think most people, when they think antibiotics, they think, well, the animal's got, you know, a virus of some kind, so they're going to get an antibiotic. But as I understand it, they are used for much more than that.
That's correct. In the large farms that have thousands of animals, they use antibiotics in the animal feed it's for two reasons. One is that presumably animals that are given low doses of antibiotics grow more quickly, and so they come to market faster. And the other reason is that the animals are so crowded together that they transmit infectious diseases to one another, so they're more likely to get ill. So they're really being prophylaxed. They're being given antibiotics to prevent them from getting infections.
And so the big problem with this, as I understand it, is that obviously then animals become meat. The meat is ingested by humans, and then some of that resistance to antibiotics winds up in human populations.
Correct. It's the bacteria that live in the intestine of the farm animals. Those organisms are exposed to the antibiotics, and antibiotics, especially when they're low-dose antibiotics, will select for antibiotic-resistant organisms that are already present in the intestines. So the antibiotics aren't causing resistance. They're random mutations to resistance. But it's a matter of survival of the fittest. So the organisms that have randomly mutated to resistance are the ones that can survive in the intestine in the presence of the antibiotics. And they become the predominant organism because the susceptible ones are killed off. And then those organisms, the feces, contaminates the environment. Farmers are found to have much higher rates of antibiotic-resistant bacteria in their feces, as are their family members. And then the stool can contaminate the meat, and the meat can get into the marketplace. And then we consumers ingest it and then get sick with organisms that are very difficult to treat because they're resistant to many of the antibiotics that are routinely used.
Yeah, and we're hearing a lot more about that these days. Do we have any idea of what role antibiotics in animals plays? Is that just part of the picture, or is there more to it than that?
Well, that's the main issue here. It's that the antibiotics that are being fed to the animals select for resistance, and then we have what we call MDR, multi-drug resistant organisms, so that they get into the food supply, get into the humans, and then cause infection in people.
So this week, as I mentioned, Wisconsin Public Interest Research Group is calling for new restrictions on antibiotic use in livestock. What exactly are you calling for?
We're calling upon the Obama administration to immediately eliminate antibiotics from the animal feed used on factory farms and allow use of the antibiotics only to treat sick animals and those animals exposed to other sick animals. So basically just for treatment of sick animals, not for routine inclusion in animal feed.
Now, last year, the FDA has acknowledged, as I understand it, that this is an issue. This idea of antibiotics being used in livestock posing a threat to humans is an issue. They have issued voluntary guidelines that were put in place, I think, last year. And in reading their website, it says that they believe this is the fastest and most efficient way to get results from the industry and from everybody else involved. What's wrong with the voluntary guidelines?
Well, voluntary guidelines are voluntary. So if they don't want to follow the guidelines, they don't have to. And it's important that this be that the change in procedure be used by everybody, because this is a huge issue.
What are other countries doing? I know in Denmark there was a law passed, I think around 2000, maybe earlier than that actually, that banned the use of, and if you look at the industry, for example, they will point to Denmark and they will say, look at what Denmark did. They banned the use of antibiotics in their animals and it's not working out well. I don't know what the flip side of that is. And again, that's the industry perspective. What is the situation in other countries, and can the U.S. learn from other countries? Maybe it's Denmark, maybe it's in other countries somewhere where they've already taken some steps or have not taken some steps.
The European Union has banned antibiotics from animal feed. So, and that was done, I believe, back in the 70s. It's been a long time ago that they realized that this was a public health issue and took action. There is a lot of publications out of Denmark where they've banned antibiotics and found that in fact the animals don't lose weight. They continue to gain weight at the expected rate, even the same, very similar to what they were when they were on antibiotics. Some were concerned that if you don't have the antibiotics in the animal feed, that then the animals will get infected more frequently and you'll be using just as much antibiotic treating sick animals. And they found that actually that's not the case, that the animals aren't getting sick more often. So there's a tremendous savings in exposure to antibiotics. There are other countries, too. Italy has done some studies, I believe, and Germany has also restricted the use of antibiotics. And some of these countries have found, they've looked for resistant bacteria before and after elimination of the antibiotics and seen tremendous drops in the frequency of antibiotic resistance. So if you take the antibiotics away, then the normal organisms, the endogenous flora that were susceptible to antibiotics, will become predominant again. And so you're able to regain the use, the utility of these antibiotics that for a while were not usable.
So you've made the request of the Obama administration. What is the process moving forward? Is it just go into a big silence someplace, or is there some actual action that's going to be taken here?
I don't know. I mean, the FDA is aware that this is an issue, and that's why they put the voluntary guidelines in place. Whether they'll make a stronger statement or not, I don't know. The CDC has made strong statements about needing to make these changes. It's supported by the American Medical Association, by the Infectious Diseases Society of America, by the American Society for Microbiology. All of those groups are being very outspoken about the need to make this change for public safety.
So let me ask you a question. Let's say that the administration drags its feet, the guidelines remain voluntary, and 5 years or 10 years, we're back in the studio having this same conversation. What are the implications of doing nothing?
Well, organisms are becoming more and more resistant, and I've been in laboratory medicine, which is clinical laboratory work. I've been in laboratory medicine since 1970. And back then, we had organisms like Streptococcus pneumoniae, that is referred to as pneumococcus. They were all susceptible to penicillin. We never saw penicillin resistance. If it was penicillin resistant, we knew it wasn't a pneumococcus. We knew it was some other organism. Now, penicillin resistance in pneumococcus is not uncommon at all. And that's an organism that causes pneumonia. It's the most common cause of bacterial pneumonia, especially in children and the elderly. And it's one of the most common causes of meningitis, especially in children. So we used to be able to treat meningitis with penicillin, which is an inexpensive and relatively non-toxic drug. And now we often have to use more expensive drugs that sometimes have more toxicity. So, as organisms become more resistant, we have fewer and fewer choices, and the choices are more expensive and more toxic. There are some organisms like Enterococcus has become resistant to vancomycin. So they're called VRE, vancomycin-resistant Enterococcus. And sometimes there are no drugs left that can be used to treat those. So we're getting to the point where we're going to have untreatable infections and what's being sometimes referred to as the post-antibiotic era. There was the pre-antibiotic era, and some have referred to it now as the post-antibiotic era, where we won't have antibiotics that can be used to treat infections.
Now, is this something, as I understand it, this is something that's happening relatively quickly?
Yes. Well, bacteria, there are random mutations to resistance about one every million organisms, and there are 10 million organisms in every ounce of feces. So you got a lot of organisms and a lot of chances for resistance. The antibiotics in feed are low dose, And so that's the optimum way to select for resistance that will increase resistance over time is by using low-dose antibiotics. So we're doing the best possible thing to develop resistance, which is not what we want to do.
So since you've released this request, have you heard from the industry? The industry will tell you that, you know, the guidelines they go by are FDA approved and it's been proven safe for use in humans and so on and so forth. Have they reached out to you to respond in any way or?
Not to me. I'm not aware of whether they've reached out to Wisberg or any other group. I mean, in the press, they're saying that they don't think it's necessary, but I don't know any specific interaction.
All right. And so we will see where it goes from there. Carol, okay. Thanks so much for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
We've been talking with Carol Spiegel, a professor emerita of pathology and laboratory medicine at UW-Madison.